Welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. Nothing ticks better than Pundit Friday, which you're about to begin here in the WNHH studio with the number one pundits in the media universe. Pundits like Babs Rawls Ivy, the very vegan goddess of our grassroots radio's Operation Belle of Our Ball and managing editor of the Inner City News and host of WNHH's Love Babs.
Hey.
Markeisha Ricks is not in this week or next. She's North Carolina.
On her way.
North Carolina, that's right. That's the state where it's all happening.
Yeah.
It's all going down.
Hope she's watching her back. We'll watch your back. But we got Norma Rodriguez Reyes, publisher of La Voz Hispana, filling in. Hello, Norma. And Joe Ugly of Joe Ugly Show in the
Feliz
morning.
Navidad.
Welcome, everybody.
Where's my title?
I thought you said on the air you no longer want to be joking around. You're a serious pundit now. You think it's taking you as less than respectful if you're teased.
See how he tries to play me?
Yeah, he said that he's teased on the air, making him seem like not a serious intellectual.
That was nothing. That had nothing to do with it.
He getting high holy on us.
No, this is the...
He said, like, they like our pundits who make fun of us, give us names and everything, but if I bring up something
serious issue...
Where
are my titles? Come on, let's go. My titles, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, anyway, in addition to Norm Rodriguez Reyes and Babs Rosazzi, we do have...
Yes, sir.
...the quintessential quipper of quotable quackery. The grandee of grandiloquence and gastronomics, prize protector against pusillanimity, the distinguished duke of diplomacy and detente, king of conspiracy concoction, deacon of the dozens, bodhisattva of battle rap. Did you mean missionary of modesty or mesmerizer of the masses? He's the shaman of the shoreline, potentate of 360 state, recognized ringleader of risque repartee, eighth wonder of the world, wizard of wise guy waggery, capable of casual conversation, first name in flame, daring Donna, don't deliberation, sultan of spit, West Indian whisperer of wonk, emperor of explosive exposition, esteemed elucidator of ebonics, top tier talent from Trinidad and Tobago, daptone deliverer of decency, maximal medium maestro, bodacious bold faced barista of bop, chess master and chill, prime practitioner of pop prestidigitation, beyond just somewhat honorable high priest of hip hop, right reverend of rapture, reigning racketeer. Raconteur of riffitude, sanctified slayer of the slow-witted, late for supper, decorated, dazzling, and indefatigable dunker and dryer of the dinner dishes, maximum mythologist Joe Ugly of the Joe Ugly Show in the morning.
Was that the top of your head? Because, you know, I didn't think you had anything prepared.
You just remember that Markeisha has asked that one of them begin with Q.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
So the first one did begin with Q.
Q, that's right.
Quintessential quipper of quotable quackery. Welcome, everybody.
We need the mixtapes.
Where's
the pundit mixtape? We need that.
Well, you know what I want to mix it up about is some people saying this is new, some people saying it's old. We saw tensions between the black and Latino leaders in New Haven emerge to the forefront this week for a couple of different reasons. It was kind of happening in the background a little bit, right? So on this radio station, Reverend Boise Kimber, African-American preacher in the public eye a lot, had come out strong against our being a sanctuary city and against embracing undocumented immigrants. That caused a big backlash. Cover story in La Voz Hispana, 2 pages. Latino leaders who don't always agree with each other agreeing that they're upset about this. They hold a big rally about it on Tuesday. But in the meantime, a second fissure developed, which is that there's a leading black officer, assistant chief, trying to become the police chief, and a Latino officer. One of them is the interim chief, Anthony Cavill. He's African-American. And then Luis Casanova is Latino. He wants to be the chief, too. And this week, Campbell disciplined Casanova. We talked about it last week that Casanova, who's known for being kind of profane or just kind of tough with officers, he didn't like the way an African-American officer was wearing his department-issued knit cap. The guy was coming in or out of his cruiser at the Hillhouse substation. He was adjusting his knit cap. He said, "You look like an effing mope. You look like an effing mope." And the officer said, had been trained not to use that word in the academy. He walked away. So then Casanova got on the police radio in front of everybody. He said, "Get to my office right now. We're talking about this." So he said, "I want a union rep there." And he got there with the union rep. Casanova wouldn't let the union rep in. It was against the department policy. So eventually he was allowed in. So Casanova did apologize later. He did admit he said what he said. So Campbell said, "Okay, take a 1-day suspension. It's not a big deal." Then Casanova got very upset about this, and his lawyer, he hired Norm Pattis to maybe challenge it. The lawyer, he wrote a blog post calling Tony Harp a mope and claiming she orchestrated this to make Casanova look bad so he can never be the chief. Harp came on the radio and said, "Are you kidding? I could just make Campbell chief if I wanted. I don't have to like smear somebody. This is what I get to do." But meanwhile, Boise Kimmer got back in the act, with African-American officer, and he joined up with, and this surprised me, the two different black police organizations, the Guardians and the Silver Shields. They held a press conference with Kimber. So it wasn't just Kimber. black officers came out of the shadow saying, this is unacceptable by Casanova, so why don't you just stop the search process and make Campbell the chief right now? And Harp said, no, I'm not changing the process. We had the process, so I'm going through with the process. So the next day, a Latino leaders, along with white and black people, black civil rights people, Barbara Fair, Michael Jefferson, white people and Latinos in Fairhaven who really remembered the good days when Casanova ran that neighborhood. He was the Fairhaven district manager before he became assistant chief, and he had very good relationship with the community, especially immigrant rights people. Mm-hmm. They came and said, you're smearing him. And there was a lot of people who were mad at the Harp administration. You had Marcus Packer, who was fired. He came there out of the woodwork. You had Nicole Jefferson, who's had her big dispute. So this became everyone who's really mad at the Harp administration. This became not Casanova. It became they're convinced that Tony Harp orchestrated this. And they came out very angry that this is all against the good man. And they said that Casanova did not deserve the suspension. It was a conflict of interest of Campbell since he's a rival of Casanova's to meet out the discipline rather than have someone else. And then yesterday we had this guy, John Vileka, who's neither white nor black. I mean, neither black nor Hispanic. He's a former acting chief of the department. He's retired. He said he thinks that the demonstrators for each candidate hurt their own candidates. He thinks it makes it hard now for Harp to pick Campbell. Looks like she's caving in. Or it makes it hard if she picked Casanova, because then does it look like Casanova got there with political help of people who are sometimes at odds with the department? Does he have to take their side? Not suggesting that either of them would do that, but just the appearance. So it's all kind of a mess, and politics is involved. I don't know. Norma, you watched all this happen, and Babs, you've seen this over the years. The police commissioner, Joe, you're in the trenches. A lot of officers, you know them. What do you guys think about this? What does this mean about the state of racial politics in our city?
I just thought this was... First of all, I was stunned by how people got on side so quickly, right? Like, I didn't think this was a big enough issue to get on side.
One day suspension isn't like, but then as Barb Fair pointed out, she had a list of all these people accused of being cops who hit people and do things mm-hmm. wrong, and they're all exonerated. She said, you know, a guy says effing mope and you're, doesn't let the union rep
I mean,
in,
I think,
you're
you know,
suspending him but not them. But other people say one day suspension, not a big deal. They just dealt with it.
But it is a big deal, because you know what? Because even though the acting chief has the ability, well within his rights, to do that, I think what would have gone a long way to fostering better relationships, he would have said, pulled him to the side and said, listen, we have to be together on this. I like you. I want to see your career blossom.
But they don't. They got the knives out for each
you
other.
Know? But see, but that's what I mean. Somebody should have taken the higher road. If the assistant, the acting chief would have said, yo, come here, let me talk to you. Listen, we can't, you know, we can't have this kind of conversation with our, with the rank and file like this. You know, that would have been a better conversation.
And he had
conversation.
Big union concerns, too. He has to deal with the union. You're allowed to have
but
union.
But that could have been a pull your tailcoats mm-hmm. to the side and have that conversation. This pulling knives out at the drop of this issue says that there's a bigger issue. So what's going to happen is, if they're not very careful, black and Latino right. doing the fight thing,
right.
and then here comes the dark horse, somebody who neither one of them saw coming,
the light
who
horse.
Will, or the light horse, or the right. white horse, that will come up and become the chief, because they both are tying the mayor's hands right. with this public, very public, ridiculous
well,
fight.
What I don't understand is, how did the mayor even got into... How was the mayor pulled into this? I mean,
if you look at who's that rally, but, it's people who are always supporting people against the mayor.
I understand, but
and
my point
fights
is
with
to
the
them, to those yeah. individuals. You know, how? Where did you wake up that morning and say, "Hey, you know what? Let me go after the mayor on this." The mayor didn't say FMO. The mayor didn't suspend anyone. I mean, the mayor, I don't want to say.
They
like
argue
I'm,
that nothing happens without the mayor being involved. That has not
that
been my experience.
So, no, not
but
at all.
But here's the evidence that's given. The police department, the reason the story broke is the police yeah. department put out a release, just two sentences that said, Chief Campbell's investigating an improper incident involving Chief Casanova. It's not racial. So I got that release and said, holy cow, official comment. That means something might have been racial and something big happens. This is the chief. Right. What happened? So I went out and talked to everyone I could and eventually pieced together and wrote a story about the mope thing. So everyone said that showed that the city was putting out a release to make Casanova look bad. In truth, what happened was Channel 8 had called her to rumor that some racial incident happened. So the department felt they should put out a thing
right.
saying it wasn't racial.
Okay.
I thought that was a mistake. You put out a no information release that tells you something big's going on. Of course, everyone wants to try to report on it. But to say that that was orchestrated by the mayor's office, I thought was a stretch.
Oh, it was a total stretch.
That's like fiction, right? That's like movie stuff.
You're right. It's like, not even movie.
Wait,
I mean,
do you know our mayor's?
But that
the
did happen. That did happen
that.
With John DeStefano. There was a lot of coordination with John DeStefano. I was in the office of two prior chiefs under DeStefano, mm-hmm. who I remember that he'd be calling and they'd be nervous. I mean, one was named O. and one was named W. But I remember I was in the room, and they were very scared about every move they made if the mayor said anything. So there is historical precedent.
Yeah, yeah.
Historical precedents with a different mayor.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I hear what you're saying, Paul. But, you know, look, I don't want to sound like if I'm over here being the mayor's cheerleader. If the mayor did something, I'll be the first one to tell you. You guys know me. I'll be the first one to say, you know what? She did it wrong.
See, I think there's mayoral politics going on. I saw at least one person in that crowd who's running for mayor.
I smell a this.
And I saw other people who have lawsuits against the city saying that it's just, and they have, and there are two sides to those. I'm not taking a side whether the mayor's right or wrong in those. But there was an anger in that audience.
I can believe.
And then one of the speakers, Lisa Carabello, said she was so mad to read in The Independent what happened in that incident. And she's so mad at us for reporting it. But if we hadn't reported it, she wouldn't know what happened. I don't know. What did you think, Norma? I mean, because you've involved Latino leaders. Part of what's happening is Latino leaders feel that the Harp administration is not appointing enough Latinos to top positions. They would like Casanova to be the
staff,
chief.
Latino?
Yeah.
Oh.
Friend
That's
of the room.
The only thing.
Oh, what do you think? What do you think? Norma, come here. Well, let's hear the other side. Norma, please get close to the mic.
Please.
Norma, is there a general feeling? I mean, there was a big meeting at Wilbur Cross with dozens of Latino leaders saying we're not getting enough respect from this administration. We're not getting enough appointments. Do they have a point? Is that what's underlying this concern with Casanova?
I think basically, I am very, very concerned with this issue in terms of the African-American community and in terms of the Latino community, because the last thing that we want is them fighting with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they fight with each other, we both lose.
We're going to lose.
We both lose.
Correct.
And the truth is that, you know, the Latino community obviously has, especially the Puerto Rican community, has been here for quite a while already. Mm-hmm. And they have paid their dues. Mm-hmm. They have been there. And now that many of them are ready for promotions,
right,
because they have paid their dues, mm-hmm, they've done the right thing. And now when it's time for promotion, mm-hmm, you know, they're not being looked at.
So do you think Casanova should be the chief because he's Latino?
No, I don't think he should be the chief because he's Latino. I think he should be the chief because he has the experience and the know-how. But
do you know why he's no longer the assistant chief in charge of patrol?
No, I understand that he's got issues.
No.
Right. This was not an isolated case. There was years of really being rough with how he talked to people. It's kind of an old style thing. To his credit, some people think this is a paramilitary organization. You're a drill sergeant Marines. But that's the reason he no longer has as prominent a position as assistant chief. The rank and file he had lost the complete support of. And it wasn't racial.
It was white, black, Latino. You know, we had this conversation before when, as we call him on my show, Dean Esselman, when he was police chief. And it's like, I mean, come on, police chief, don't they always yell at their command? I mean, listen, if he's not bringing it to the public, I guess they have their way of commanding.
He has very good relations
because
with the public.
Because I guess what I do is I look back at the military, with my time in the military. And yes, your commanders yell at you. Yes, they tell you stuff. Well, yeah, but they don't do it to civilians. I'm just saying.
Okay.
I'm just comparing it.
I have two thoughts on this. One, you know, I don't think cops are police officers are, you know, like ballerinas and so sensitive about whatever. I don't think that. And but I do think this is their work, right? This is your job. When you go to your job, you expect to be treated with.
Do you have rights to get to have a union rep when you have to? If you're instructed, don't speak to people this way.
Here's my answer to that.
Did that same supervisor speak to you that way?
Well, are you paying your union dues?
Yeah.
If you're paying your union dues, then you should have a union representation.
That part,
because that's what you pay for.
With you.
It's not a volunteer thing. You're paying for that.
Right.
So, you know, you get to have that. But I think this issue. The small issue seems to be the underneath thing is the bigger thing. I'm sure they talk back and forth to each other all kinds of ways.
Of course.
But in this particular instance
mm-hmm,
because there's so much on the line, right?
Right.
Because there's this
open chief job.
Yeah, there's this open chief job that people are happen to be vying for.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, oh, look how unbecoming you are to be chief. Oh, well, you're not chief yet. and you're making bad decisions already.
Yeah, I was talking to some of the veteran cops involved in this, including at the rally for Casanova. They said there's always been black, Hispanic, white tensions in that department, especially when there's an open job that people are going for. And then it went back. Ortiz, when he got named in 2002 or three, there was an African-American, Brian Norwood, who was also up for the job. And for years, the tensions remained over who got that job and why. And politicians did get involved. But what's interesting to me, and I could be blind about this, I believe that that racial tension is not there at the beat cop level. I could be wrong. I interviewed yesterday a team, black and white cop, who requested, I mean, black and Latino cop, requested to be together for 2.5 years now, who would work great together, really love each other, and he does back. This cop who made the complaint, he's black. His partner is Latino. They've made some great arrests together and work together, and they got a great camaraderie. And people say it's different when politics is involved and power is involved and people are involved.
Once
in
you get that brass,
versus
in that
how one on one people deal with each other on day when you're in the line of fire as an officer.
I mean, that's real stuff. And I think, you know, I'm not so moved by the politics of it, because you're going to have politics in it. Some people play the game better than others. And so the problem I have with this is that each side is so equally making people draw a line so quickly, right? And they're not paying attention to the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is they're going to cancel each other out. That's what's going to happen.
What do you think, Norma?
Well, this definitely, because it's the discretion of the mayor to decide who the next chief is. Mm-hmm. They just developed a process, which they're going through the process. But now with these two incidents that have occurred and sides being drawn, you know, that puts her in a very, very difficult position to decide. Because if you decide for Campbell, then you have all of Casanova's. And then if you decide for Casanova, you have all of Campbell's. But my whole concern here is that, let's just say for the sake of argument, that Campbell should be appointed the next chief, which a lot of people are in favor of. You know, my concern is Casanova, who has been a veteran for many years, has been there for a long time. I don't want to see him destroyed, his reputation destroyed, right, to the point that then nobody else is going to want him.
And I do think everyone would agree that this incident was not of the magnitude that it should affect his reputation.
Yeah, I agree. I thought this was an overkill. Just well
people, a lot
over
of people
the
blew
top.
It over, yeah.
Like,
you know,
what?
You highlighted something, and again, I go back to my military days when I was a private all the way on up to Spec 4, where you were in the field with everyone else. Like you say, you get along with everyone, you know, different races as such. As soon as I became a sergeant, which I
didn't know you were a sergeant.
Oh, absolutely. As soon as I went to sergeant.
You can't tell.
Sergeant, I mean, all those names and titles you have, there isn't a certain sergeant there.
Add an S on. But as soon as I went to sergeant, buck sergeant at that, and I was up for sergeant first class after that. But the as soon as that happened, you know, you go into management and you take on a whole different role, upper management. And it's then you realize the politics starts. Now I'm dealing with E5, E6, E7s. And it's us against.
What does that mean?
That's the upper ranks, you know, upper rank in the military, which is pretty much like upper brass in the police department. So now the politics that's coming in, the politics of the orderly room, i.e. City Hall, you know, so it takes a different turn. I think that for this situation, when I look at this, I see, yes, union rep, like Bab said, should have been involved. And blocking out union reps, that was wrong. But this guy also have a great reputation in the community.
He does.
As doing
Casanova,
good work. Casanova, I'm speaking
I think it's a lot of times people get kicked upstairs and things change when you're involved in the political atmosphere and the desk atmosphere. He liked being out in the community as a cop. He was a Fairhaven district manager who worked well with a lot of different kinds of people.
And I think if he had said the same words while he was in rank, in lower rank with everyone else, blown over. It would have been anything, but
listen,
because
some
it
people,
came from them.
By the point
the
is,
brass.
He's in charge of professional standards. Yeah. He's in charge. He tells people, he's quoted recently, saying that you just can't talk to people in rude and demeaning ways.
That don't mean, yeah,
I mean, you can't.
That don't mean that
so
you
doesn't
would.
He have to set the example?
Yeah, you see, that example thing, yeah, okay, all right. That,
yeah,
that's
it does. I mean, some people play politics
again,
better than
let's
others.
Not blow it over.
That's
let's not,
exactly
blow,
what
let's
it
not
is.
Blow this over.
That's what
this
it
is. Not the
some
biggest
people
thing
play,
that ever happened.
Some people play politics
better,
than others.
That's true.
And he just didn't, you know.
He didn't play the politics.
He didn't play the politics.
But neither did Campbell.
When
you become chief, mm-hmm. everything changes. Because not only must you look out for all of your those that are under you, mm-hmm. but also you have to be very careful as to whatever decision you make is going to affect the mayor and the city as a whole. So
That's
you
true.
Have to be able to understand those two roles right. and balance them off.
So why couldn't Casanova's assistant chief just say, hey, I shouldn't have said that. Sorry.
Because that's not what we do anymore. We
but
don't
maybe
apologize.
A police chief
it's
needs
so
to.
Bad.
Maybe
You're
a police chief needs
You're
to.
Absolutely right. You know what? And this is a result of, this is a behavior of closing ranks. This could be a behavior of, instead of just saying, I'm sorry, you close ranks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You shut down. You go Clinton. That's what right. I call going Clinton. Mm.
Or you we know? Could just go reminding people that they're listening to Pundit Friday on WNHH Radio. New Haven's home for community radio at 103.5 FM and live stream at independent.org. It's Pundit Friday with Norma Rodriguez Reyes, Babs Rolls Ivy, and the many titled Joe.
Now
Ugly.
Sergeant.
Hey, we haven't heard much about what might have been the most significant thing that happened in New Haven this week. Mm. It's all kind of hush hush except inside the 13 floors of the Alexion Tower at 100
Ooh.
College Street.
White collar crimes.
So now, the biggest economic success story in New Haven, the biggest job creator has been Alexion Pharmaceuticals. They were a company that hatched these new drugs, pharmaceutical right. drugs at Science Park. They left town to Cheshire. They're going to move to another state. Don Malloy said, came in with a white horse, said, corporate welfare, it's all yours if you just stay in New Haven. So they built the 13-story towers.
Which is nice.
It was
Have
nice.
You seen
100
this thing?
College Street, yep.
Hold on. Their stocks has been plummeting that, over this,
yeah,
this last
right,
week.
That's right. So that's what happened. So everything was going great. They opened in the last year. They said we're going to bring hundreds of jobs. They brought hundreds extra. The place is going great gangbusters. And then quietly it's announced this week, the CEO and the CFO are gone. And we have an internal investigation that we've used deceptive marketing techniques for our main drug, Solaris. Like basically everything we're doing is crooked.
How
we're selling it. Everything our company is based on, those 14 stories, or they call it 14 because they don't want to say they have a 13th floor for bad luck, or 13 stories. And that's all we heard. And Todd's stock plummeted more than 10% in the first few hours.
I wonder why the stocks was just plummeted.
I know.
Monday,
I heard the whispers.
Since Monday, I'm watching the stocks. Actually, it started last week.
And I'm watching the stocks. Somebody told me they drove by and later in the evening, there was one couple floors just all lit up and people going in and they thought there must have been some kind of...
Do we have
but it's
more
so funny.
On
we
this
talk,
story?
We talk about effing mope.
In it,
but meanwhile, what
a big scandal is going right over
what people determines about, hundreds of thousands of dollars of tax revenue, hundreds and hundreds of local jobs, really hang in the balance of what happens at these big employers.
And this is the thing that really hurt the city,
story.
Right?
Yes.
Like, this is the thing that really will
and
hurt.
A lot of state investment in that. So I don't know what it means for the company. Now, immediately what I thought about this was with HireOne. That was another high-tech company that started here mm-hmm. that the state spent a lot of money to build a beautiful new headquarters. They're not gone. They're stripped down. They got bought by another company. They, too, were built on an allegedly deceptive business model. They allegedly were fooling students as acting as contracted out bursars in colleges around the country, not letting them see through the fine print. And they were taking advantage of them, and the attorneys general were involved. The U.S. government sued. There was shareholder suit. And finally, their value went down. And then I remember walking there quietly the day that they were bought by some big company. They're just some division of somewhere else now. Who knows what the future was going to be? And one of the divisions was leaving. And it was just three people at this meeting that went out. The Ted Kaye went out about the what was happening. And there was a shareholder notice on the SEC website. And there were just three people in a room no bigger than this to make the votes. And it was all gone. It was done.
Oh, man.
So, what makes me wonder is that I think we are doing the right thing, trying to get jobs of the future. I think we're the right thing, trying to land companies. I think that we're trying to train people for those jobs. We're trying to make it possible to build here and have headquarters and get the tax revenue. I think the lesson might be not that we're doing anything wrong, but that conventional approaches to economic development somewhat bank on how the economy used to work. We have more creative destruction now. Companies go in and out.
Yes.
The publicly traded companies are often pressured to operate in ways to get short-term returns that might make them shave corners, that there's not as much of an emphasis on what's the long-term way of doing business because the market changes so fast and we have high-speed trading, global economy, technology changing the way industries work, especially finance and drug research. So I just thought it was a cautionary tale this week.
I mean, it's always a cautionary tale. We can't, a business comes to town and says, this is what I do. This is who I'm going to hire. This is what we're going to do. That's the beginning and the end of it for the municipality. We can't go in there and regulate and tell them and check. We can't do it.
No, we can't, but we have to be very cautious with our investment
into
these companies.
I think
I still think it was the right investment.
I, do too. I think it was the right investment.
14
too.
Floors just might close out. How good of an investment? By the way, is that a lab over there or is it just office space?
I'm not sure. I know there's a lot of office space. I think there might be lab space too. But
I hope
not
it wasn't
sure.
any lab. I mean, they you could turn those into apartments. It's a nice building, by the way.
Listen, they can't. I know, right? I'm like,
that is true with Joe, but you're already up above the 14th floor.
But I'm not.
I look over them, you know, but I just, you know.
I might
That's
give
about
some
the
loft,
height that I'm going to let
give me
go.
Some loft space after
Meanwhile,
all.
Meanwhile, second development. Then you got the bottom end development. This week, the city opened at a small business center on Dixwell Avenue, you know, that one-stop shopping place near where the juncture is with Shelton Avenue. They're renewing the small business contract development program. So they're going to be spending $30 million to build a new strong school in Southern. And the people who got that contract said meeting with plumbers, electricians, sheetrockers, who have small little companies saying, come here, we're going to help you get the subcontracting work. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, and they're working on this great New Haven Business Professional Organization, which is sort of like the Black Chamber of Commerce. And they're saying that there are a lot of ways that people here don't, especially people of color, don't get these subcontracts, which right. are crucial to local employment because it's hard to get them because you need a lot of money to put up as a bond.
Correct.
Or one thing they're talking about at this session, say we're going to help you get these subcontracts, is if you group together to do a bunch of the work together, that can also help you get a bigger piece of the pie,
right.
beat out other people because you have a more attractive application.
Well, that was the problem with the Alexion. Speaking of, that was the building issue that minorities could not get the contracts because they couldn't do the bond.
I think I'm just annoyed at 2016 because I served on the Equal Opportunities Commission. So I understand.
you mad know, at the year?
Right. I mean, I did this stuff.
Is there a board you haven't been on? Animal shelter.
Lord have mercy.
Does the animal shelter have a board?
I don't know. Don't
you around the police commissioner board of all
this? Because I don't even want anybody to put my name on that.
The Environmental Advisory Committee. I have not seen your name
no,
on that.
And you no, you won't. But okay. I've been on a lot of boards the environment? And commissions. No, I have not. I love the environment. I love the air that I breathe.
Anyway, I took you off the track. Sorry about that. Commission
right.
on Equal Opportunity. So what were you saying?
So I understand Davis Bacon and all of these kinds of things. What I'm baffled by in 2016 is that we are still having these conversations about minority contractors and how to help them and support them. So it's as if people are not talking to the minority contractors and
not.
Hearing what they say.
They're
they
not.
Will tell you what they need to
We had
to
them
see
on the radio,
happen.
And a big part was getting the bonding so that you can
right.
have a bid
you
in.
You have them, but who from these agencies are really stepping up to talk to the minority contractors and letting them know this is what you need to do? What you just said made sense. If you pool your resources, you can get these contracts, but they keep getting closed out because someone did not listen to WNHH, so they're out in the dark.
Someone didn't.
No, I'm just saying, if they didn't, you know, they're out in the dark.
I just baffled.
There's
that
no
we keep
reach out.
These
There's no outreach.
You know,
and you have to do outreach within the minority communities because minority communities usually working from. A job. It's not like a plan out, you know, a long plan
right,
out.
Right, they need
to
continue. What were you saying, Norma? Yeah.
I think basically when it comes to minority contracting and minorities being, first of all, the unions have to make a commitment to help out these minorities.
Yeah.
Okay? I don't see the commitment there. Yep. The other thing also is...
They were involved in the apprenticeship program before it closed down, the whole fight over the whole Jefferson and the construction workforce initiative. The unions did put up the money for a lot of that, and they try to have apprenticeship programs.
Then the other thing is you have big-time contractors that they bid on the contract, and then they subcontract
Correct.
To the minorities. The other big problem
well, that's
that
what
I
that
really...
was this week, Norma. They had the contractor in who had a partner who was an African-American partner at GC, and they were trying to help these other people get the subcontracts.
Because see, like, especially with Latinos contracting, see, a lot of them, they know how to do the work. They have the individuals to do the work, but they're not good in paperwork. In terms of submitting the, making the bids
right.
or, the... actual deciding how much money to the cost of that particular bid and the rules and regulations regarding a bid.
Right.
That's where it's necessary and the help can come. And then you'll really be helping minority businesses out. If there was somebody that can help them package walk them through the process.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you, 100.
Well, I agree that we're listening to Pundit Friday on WNHH's Dateline New Haven, 103.5 FM live stream, newhavenindependent.org. So some students are speaking up at the high schools. It's so great that we have these two student members on the Board of Education. They're really sharp. They speak up. They're reasonable. And they're constructive. And they were saying this week that they've been hearing a lot from their students about guidance counselors. Apparently at the schools, the counselors move every year. There's always a shortage. You don't get to know the same person from year to year, and they're really not stepping up to helping the kids.
They still use guidance counselors?
They do to help you get in college. They're crucial, Joe.
Yeah, they are.
They're crucial in terms of helping you figure out where to apply for college. But also to help you get the roles they play include.
I agree.
Helping you figure out where to apply to college. Help you get your paperwork you need so your application will be in. Whether
my guidance counselor wasn't helpful at all.
Thank you. That's my point. The job description.
This was 4 years ago, whatever it is.
The job description is.
My guidance counselor wasn't helpful.
But do we want to give the kids in our schools even more of a disadvantage to get into colleges they want because they don't have the guidance counselors that they have in these suburban
and
private schools?
But you don't have them. They're not. what my point is. And guidance counselors are going to jump ugly with ugly, but let's go. My point is, ever dating back to when I was in high school, and I went to school with Moses. So dating back that long, guidance counselors wasn't effective then. My guidance counselor, like you said, Babs, totally. I had to look around at the end of the day and say, man.
Well, I went to Eli Whitney.
I got
to
do something for myself because this
well, they weren't
is
even thinking
adult.
You guys are going to college, no. Right?
That's
exactly.
Right. If it had been up to my guidance counselor, I never would have gone to UConn.
See?
Tell me about that. What did your guidance counselor do, Norma?
Nothing. Huh?
She's saying the guidance counselor did.
No. If it had been up to my guidance counselor, I would not have gone.
See that? What did your guidance counselor tell you?
Nothing. They never look for you. There is absolutely no plan. You would think that they would at least... You know, meet with all the students, you know.
Correct.
There should be a auditorium where all of the students get to meet personally with the guidance counselor and she can help them. But you know what? It also has a lot to do with the guidance counselor being hired by the Board of Education. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of them, they should subcontract that service out so that the guidance counselor can do all kinds of.
Wait, what does that mean? Wait. I want to say what Norma means by that. You don't think they should be Board of Ed employees?
No. I think they should. I think it should be a hybrid. Some of them, Board of Education, but others, that is their profession and that they really want to come
that's
in.
The key
but
right
why
there.
Shouldn't the profession be a public profession? Why does it need to be some private company that's not going to give you benefits or be as accountable to the public?
Well, it does not necessarily.
I mean, teaching's a
profession. You know, I'll be honest, Paul.
I don't think teaching should be
a
subcontract.
I honestly think that, there's private teachers, but... I honestly think that Board of Guidance Counselors, I thought for years that was somewhere that you go for punishment.
Yeah.
Actually,
your point and both Norma and Babs, I've heard that other place. I heard more recently because, you know, we're a little older. I won't say how old in this room. But I have a person I know I talked to whose daughter 3 years ago got into Yale. Mm-hmm. She's from New Haven, Latino, star student. And the guidance counselor in New Haven High School said, because she was Latino from New Haven, said, here's the school she'd apply to, and they were all second, third tier schools.
Right.
She ended up having to decide among several Ivy League schools that wanted her, and she's becoming a doctor now. And they told her, basically, the counselor said, you know, basically, if you're a person of color in New Haven, you don't aim too high.
That counselor did not guide, did they?
So maybe you're saying there's more than just what the students are saying, but I still think the students have a point, don't you? That you want the same counselor in the building from year to year. And you want to have
not
if
they're
on the
spot. Good. No, only right.
If but the answer is to make them good. Not
I don't
want to have.
You can see somebody can every see day somebody, for 4 years and wave at
really?
Them.
Really? That's just like
right, hey,
how that's just like hiring somebody
answer,
black just because they're black.
But isn't the
no,
answer to make them good at the job?
Issues,
isn't the answer to make them good at the job instead
but
of not hiring them?
But something wrong with guidance counselors. It's not just obviously. There's. Let me show you how bad the problem is.
Are we listening to students? Either we listen to students
generation.
Or we don't.
Well, they tell us what they want. They want our guidance counselors who are there year to year.
So that's what they want. Because clearly, if they're saying what they want, they're not getting it.
Right.
Right?
We're talking generations of a problem here. We're not joking. If you got students right now complaining about the same thing we're complaining, I graduated from high school
I came
in
out
in 1980, I graduated in 81. You know, come on. Are you kidding me? And you
there's
got the
been
same
students,
problems?
There's right. been students, okay, that are supposed to graduate, mm-hmm. and the counselor never told them, you're not going to be able to graduate
right.
because
you
didn't take this class.
You didn't take... They're
okay?
supposed to guide.
They're supposed to watch every single to make sure that you have all the prerequisites to be able to graduate.
And I'm not saying
it's not
all of them are like that.
When my kids were, take summer school.
When my kids are at Wilbur Cross, and now we're talking about 8 years ago, 10, 12 years ago, there was a wonderful guidance counselor they had, and then he retired, but his load was huge.
Yeah.
So you had to wait
a long time. See, that's the problem.
You had to wait a long time to see him.
Yeah.
And he was good at cutting through tape. they didn't really need his help to get into a college, but like he needed help cutting through tape to get signs, form signs. It's really more of a headache than you think.
Yeah,
and
it
I
is.
Saw he had too much work on his plate. And then when he was gone, there was they had to deal with a bunch of different people every few months. Very nice people, and they didn't need anything urgent from them. But I saw how the system didn't work.
Listen, my daughter graduated from sound school. I couldn't tell you one thing about this guidance counselor over there. And I like sound school. Mm-hmm. But I knew that I could not depend on the school guidance counselor to do what I needed done.
What about someone who doesn't have a parent like that?
Exactly.
Babs?
What about the kid who don't have
a
BAPS?
Your daughter
exactly.
had
BAPS,
you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly.
That's my point. If you don't got me as a parent, what you got? And if you don't have, you know, in my circle, parents who like will advocate for you and get in there and, hey, I need to ask this question, this thing. What are you going to do? So you have kids. So the guidance counselor should be that fallback, right?
So, yeah. So what are you going to do if you got change in your pocket and you're walking down Chapel Street, right?
I'm going to give it to the
And there's a homeless
people.
Person. You don't want to feel like some kind of jerk who says, no, I don't have change for you. But you're also thinking, gee, I really don't know if this person's homeless. I don't know if they're going to use it for drugs or what, but I do want to give money to the homeless. The city is putting up parking meters, tangerine parking meters, that you don't use for parking. You use it to put change in, and that money goes directly 100% to groups that help the homeless.
You know what? If you're making a judgment about some change you give somebody, then that is not about the person who is asking you for
us.
The change.
Right.
That is about
right.
your
I
soul
feel
itself.
Like I'm hypocrite.
Because I don't care. I'll give a dollar. You know what it takes for somebody to walk? I don't care if you think they're homeless or drug dealers or drug addicts or whatever. Do you know what it takes for somebody to walk up to you and look you in the eye and ask you for
Babs.
Some money,
no
for
Babs.
Some change.
No
I don't
Babs.
Care. I don't make
no
a judgment. If you,
let,
if
I'm
you,
not finished. Let her finish.
I'm not.
If you walk up to me and ask me for a dollar and I have it, it's yours. You know why?
Because
I'm not
going to
make
let her finish.
Okay. Can I have a dollar?
I'm not going to make
Everyone
a judgment. I'm not going to make a judgment about somebody's character or how they live in based on them asking me for a dollar.
So, Joe, what's the other view on that?
The other view of that is, first of all, there is a difference between being a homeless person and a bum.
I don't say
and a scan
bum.
Artist.
Okay. All right. Let me tell you. Homelessness comes from circumstance. Mental illness, loss of job.
Yeah, but
a whole bunch of other stuff. Someone who set out to con me out of my money every single day.
This would be the U.S. government.
This is your... Well, look, at least... What'd you say?
Well, Joe, you know, some of the people who started this plan actually did agree with Joe. They were saying that they think some of these homeless people are doing scams. They come in every day. But
you
other people would
people
say what Bab says.
Light,
it's a dollar.
Yeah. Did you see this? Over the Lexion building, by the Lexion where 34 is, it's a very busy intersection. Yeah. You got people signaling each other to push the walk button so the lights stay red longer so they can walk by with
so
their Babs's sign.
So Bab's point is, but
it's
they're desperate. What's wrong with helping them?
Yeah,
what's
the problem? What's the problem? If
that's your job, if
what's
that's
the problem?
No,
I actually think this is a great debate. You know why?
But you know,
if that's what you set out
for instance,
do
you know how
not,
I feel when people ask
same.
Me for money? I do, because I usually have money with me all the time. Mm. I give it to them, and you know what I say? Through the gate, by the grace of God, that's not me mm-hmm. or one of mine.
Good. I agree.
So, what do you think of these meters? They're saying some people say, well, that takes away having to look people in the face, makes us less human and judgmental.
It does.
Other people say this makes sure that. The percentage of dollars that go to helping people not be homeless is higher.
See, you know what? We want to put a judgment and a morality on help. and what we think is help for somebody. If I give a homeless guy a dollar and he goes to the liquor store and buys a beer, cheers, brother. Buy the beer. Because you know what? That beer might make the difference for you.
That's not what I'm saying.
I'm not sweating
I'm just
that.
Saying if you're planning on conning me out, this is your job.
But they're not
this
conning
is
you.
Your
they're
job.
Asking you.
But no. Babs has such an interesting point here.
She
such
has an interesting point but
because
I'm
even,
not
let's say
that.
Crack. Some people say it's self-medication. Yeah. We're not telling people how they're going to get through the day. We're not in their circumstances.
Right.
But others of us feel like we don't have tons of money. We give a lot of money. We want to help people. And you're right, Babs, they would define the help. I would rather the dollar I give help someone have a place, a roof to sleep, rather than, or if meal, than a crack pipe.
I hear
but
what you're saying.
But I think Babs isn't wrong. I'm just saying, I'm telling you, human, I'm being honest, Babs, about what goes through my mind. And I agree, it might be judgmental. It might be paternalistic. It might be wrong. But that is something a lot of us feel. But I think what you say is really interesting, too.
I don't feel that way. I don't make this. Somebody asks me for some money, I don't make a judgment. I don't make a judgment. Because you know what? It's a dollar. How am I going to put somebody's character and assess them based on them asking me for a dollar?
You're
and they
right.
may have
I do
asked
for 25
50 people
cents.
For a dollar all day today, or 100 people, or whatever it is.
Well, actually, 5 minutes ago, Jogli asked you for a dollar. I didn't see
it. It didn't come across this stuff yet.
No, but you know how I look at things.
Still on the other side of the council.
He's got
dollar?
More money than me.
I personally have seen, you know, families that have someone with heroin addiction or even alcoholism and beat up on their mother when they want that. So you know what? I've always said, even if the money that I give them is to go get them what they need, then at least I see myself as having helped that person not go beat up on somebody or rob somebody because they need that fix. Unless there's a way that you can help them get out of that habit.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Maybe they don't want to get out of the habit. And that's their right too, right?
How do you know that Christ is among us every time he walks up to you?
Well, you want to talk about Christ. I mean, he said,
how do we not know that?
He said, teach how to fish, seriously. Not just give a fish.
But you know what?
Yeah, hey. Okay. You want to go to Christ.
Because you helped one of my small ones, you helped me too.
There you go. When you help the least of them, then you are helping me.
This
right?
is a great debate that goes back
when
a long time.
When it's how you help. That's
no,
what I mean.
There's no how to help.
It's a judgment call
if
on everything
on
we
fire,
do.
I
all of a sudden
water.
Now we don't have judgment
don't
call.
Don't figure
on.
It out.
It's my quarter.
How do
I'm going to judge
fire
you.
Out? Water. How about that?
It's my dollar. I'm going to judge you.
Well, how about conspiracies? Now, one of Joe's favorite conspiracies was definitely proved to be true.
Oh, what?
There is no question that the Russians were meddling in our election. And I what's interesting about it to me, because this is where the CIA came out saying that they did try to disrupt our election. And now there's a whole debate about what do we do about it. Even the Republicans in Congress and the Senate want to investigate. Donald Trump says, no, there's no proof they did it. You know what's interesting to me about this whole thing?
That they don't recognize that Russia is our enemy?
Yeah, well, I don't know, but I think when Joe was first talking about, and I was teasing about conspiracy theorists, he was right then, too. It had already been reported, because what Russia did, there's still no evidence. This report wasn't as new to me this week, because there's no evidence that they actually got the vote total to change. What was reported before the election was that they were planting fake stories to smear Clinton and help Trump, and now we're finding out also congressional races against Democrats, and that they're doing this in other countries, and they're very good at the hacking, and they got those leaks of WikiLeaks, but there still isn't evidence that they affected the outcome of the vote. There's so many factors going to election, and also that we've done this. Our country has gone in other countries, especially in Latin America, and put out propaganda fake stories. It's just that they've gotten really good
but
at it.
But disruption alone, I mean, the information alone is disruptive enough to where it can affect the outcome of the
right, and they also tried to do one other thing, but I don't think they succeeded.
And they've been doing it, like you said, in other countries, very successful
and what they
by
tried
doing
to do,
the exact same thing.
What they tried to do in Ukraine was when to hack into the system that reports the initial numbers to a central facility so that the initial report can be wrong so that when the real number comes out later, no one trusts it. But to this day, I still have not seen any evidence that they were able to do that in this election.
But we don't know that yet.
We don't, and there should be an investigation.
Right. And the thing that I...
It's too early to tell.
Right. The thing that drew my attention was, you know, the Senate Intelligence Committee just don't go public. It just don't. And when you get the Intelligence Committee start going public with an open letter to the president, I'm like, whoa, there's more to this. There's more than just
there
smoke.
Is, and now there's a debate that goes on about whether Democrats are wusses. That's how I'm going to detect this.
And I agree
because
with
the Republicans in North Carolina lost the governor's race, so they immediately changed the law on what the governor can do, so he'd have no more power.
What kind of nonsense?
But look
is
at
this?
What Obama did. I have to tell you, this is why I love Obama. So I'm going to come out as a wuss, okay? Obama decided not to release some of this right before the election because he thought it could tilt it in the Democrats' favor, and he thought that was bad for the country.
Worse.
And because
listen, somebody has to
I'm still
call.
Glad he did that.
No, well, he's an honorable guy.
No, that was a bad guy.
Bad Rose Ivy is not that honorable.
Thank you. I'm with you.
Yes, you are when it comes to giving money to anyone but Joe Ugly.
No, that's true. But I swear to you, I think that would have found its way out.
Do you know that there's actually a racial aspect to this?
Yeah.
In the 2000 election, when people feel that in Florida they stole the election from Gore, the Republicans sent out from the highest level, official Republican RNC presidential campaign, sent out people to disrupt the process so that there couldn't be a recount.
Right.
Or that was thuggish. Uh-huh. And then when they seated, the Senate when they seated and they approved, you know, confirmed the Electoral College vote. At the time, we didn't know about this, but when Michael Moore put out a movie later, he had footage from C-SPAN. It was the African American members, not just the Senate, but Congress, who stood up speech after speech to say, this election was stolen. We think we should stop the process right now. Months after everyone moved on, with the rest of us, including me, and said, Bush won. He did win. You know, it's over. Don't fight about it. And I wonder whether groups that have seen the system unfairly stacked against them and haven't benefited from that are more likely to stand up and not be a wuss. But how does that explain the Republicans coming out and being street fighters and breaking the rules?
I don't know about that, Paul. I don't think black people are more inherently prone to... because of experiences to be sort of more on the right side of things.
No, fight against it being stolen.
No, the majority will. Not all, but the majority will. I agree with that.
Let me see what Bowser's going to say
here.
I wished we could have fought for that, right? Because that would have set a different tone. Because we wouldn't be here now. Because now we have to decide, and we are deciding to fight. We got to fight. Because if you roll over now...
But who's fighting? Who's fighting at the top? The Democrats aren't fighting.
No, the Democrats aren't fighting. Well, somebody needs to put their feet to the fire.
Everyone is worried.
Or they all need to be out of office, too.
The Democrats are not fighting. You know why they're not fighting? Because they realize themselves that they're very divided in there and that they didn't provide what needed to be provided so that a Trump wouldn't get elected.
What exactly were they supposed to provide?
They never came... You know what? The Democrats definitely did not come out. Any blue state was a given. And you know what? If you don't feel love, you're not going to give love.
So you're talking about Wisconsin and Michigan.
I'm talking about all these cities that Hillary never even bothered to visit because it was a given.
And then
we were there. We were hers.
Because I got to admit,
but she still won.
But if you look at the national polls,
she still won by the 2%.
But she didn't. That's a false number. You know why it's a false number?
2.7%.
Yeah, but they weren't running for the popular vote. That wasn't
right.
the strategy.
Okay, I understand.
Donald Trump could have won if he went for the popular vote instead of the electoral vote.
But let me ask you a question.
That's really a false premise.
Do you really and truly think that if Donald Trump had won the popular vote and not the electoral college, it'll be Hillary Clinton elect right now?
No, they wouldn't be wusses. They'd be trying to tear down the country.
Exactly.
But I still think they would have been wrong because they ran for electoral votes, not the popular vote. You can't say Hillary won the popular vote because they weren't running for the popular vote.
No. But what I am going to highlight is what I'm responding to is what Norma was saying in regards to they did not cover certain, did not cover. Maybe they didn't go to certain blue states, i.e. Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. They should have went there more, which they did go, but not more. Wisconsin, she did not. But she should have went there more. But across the board, they did what they're supposed to do.
Well, I don't know about that, Joe, because, I think the Democrats didn't do a good job of touting Obama's record. I don't think they did a good enough job.
Oh,
saying,
yes, they did, especially Hillary Clinton.
I don't think so. I don't think they did a good enough job. The Democrats did not run away. But I don't think the Democrats, I'm not talking about just her, I'm talking about Democrats everywhere. They did not carry that water for Obama the way they should have.
They should have picked one of the Castro brothers in the first place, like I said. They picked Tim Kaine.
I thought Tim McCain was great.
You don't even remember his name.
I thought he was great.
Tim Kaine was not great. It's one thing to speak Spanish than being Spanish.
Let's give the final word to the woman who speaks Spanish, Norma.
I think that if Hillary had chosen Bernie Sanders, she would have been president.
Vincent Ramos! Bernie Sanders. Well, anyway, thank you for listening today on Dateline New Haven, the Friday Pundits.
Give it
thanks up! Thanks to the pundits, Bam Charles Ivy, Joe Ugly, and the last defender of Bernie Sanders in the Northern Hemisphere, Norma Rodriguez-Reyes. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. Now we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. So book it and fly free with us all day and night at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio. Good Shabbos, y'all.